webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution. And now, here's Glenn Klein online.
And thank you, Robert Moore. And greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It is Hump Day, Wednesday, December 21st, 2011. The only third webcast of the Start of Winter Pledge Drive 2011 in the history of the world. Welcome in on this Gospel Revolution Wednesday night. Glad to have you along for the journey. Glenn Klein online in the Bay of the Holy Spirit studio, just adjacent to the very handsome and talented Sean O'Halloran, who is ready to take your call. If you're listening and it is about 8:45 on the east coast of the U.S. of A. on this particular Wednesday night at 9 o'clock in the evening, that is your cordial invitation to call us at 1-800-436-3260. That is the toll-free hotline in Canada and the U.S. at 1-800-436-3260. Get in early and often. For you guys that are listening live outside North America, we have a line available to you as well at 813-425-5773. 813-425-5773. This is the third webcast of the Start of Winter Pledge Drive. We're going to be talking about that as we extend an extra 15 minutes or so, so that when we do talk about finances, it does not take away from our discussion about the gospel. Even our discussion of finances, beautiful humans, somehow involves the discussion of the gospel. Stay logged on to find out how. And now, without any further ado, let us go across the Gulf of Mexico to the home offices of the Gospel Revolution, to the president and founder, the Grand Poobah, the most high and holy reverend, the false Christ, the Kentucky Colonel, the teacup poodle of the Gospel Revolution. That might be his most endearing title. Please welcome online Mr. Michael Williams. Michael.
Good evening, Glenn.
Good evening, Michael.
It's a beautiful night in Houston. How are things in Tampa?
Is there a song like that?
How are things in Tampa?
No. A beautiful night in Houston. No, it's not a beautiful night in Houston. Where is it a beautiful night in?
In Houston tonight.
A wonderful night in Houston. No, it is absolutely gorgeous.
A rainy night in Georgia.
A rainy night in Georgia. That's what it is.
Oh, jeez.
Well, see, it wasn't so bad. You were able to interpret, which is not a gift of the Spirit, but nonetheless, we appreciate the interpretation.
You never know.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your opportunity to be involved. We are webcasting live right now. If you are listening, and it's just a couple minutes after the start of the program at 8:45 in the East Coast, that's your time to call. You guys that are listening on the archive, which we know is the vast majority of you, you can email us at any time at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. That is the direct question email address, webcast@gospelrevolution.com, or you can call us at 1-800-436-3260, 800-436-3260 in Canada and the U.S. of A. 813-425-5773 is the number worldwide. And we have it in the past had calls from outside North America live and direct. And we would love another one at 813-425-5773. Michael, last week, as we read all the beautiful humans who had contributed thus far to the pledge drive, we just happened to notice that all the names were from Canada and the U.S. And so we sent out a worldwide challenge for those on the other continents. And we did indeed hear from other continents, or at least one other continent this week. And we'll be getting to that later on in the program. But we're very appreciative for everybody who is donating their time and donating their finances and sharing the gospel during the course of their day.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, come on, nations of the world. This is a planetary endeavor. And your participation is more than welcome. It is needed. And you'll feel real good because you did.
Why is that?
Just knowing that you are reaching out to other people and to really to speak past the darkness of Christianity. It really amazes me to hear myself say such a thing, honestly. But one of the most wonderful things that has happened to me in the gospel and understanding the gospel is the delineation between Christianity and the gospel. I think that the number one was the delineation between the scriptures and the Bible. And I think now, because of that delineation, I think we've been able to delineate between the gospel and Christianity, and that just allows for the gospel to have its full or much fuller impact, and certainly it did as in its trappings of Christianity. But it makes me feel good to know that I am helping people to find that compass in their heart and to be able to understand the thing that's been crying out of their heart all their lives anyway.
No doubt. I think that's a great way to put it. And even though many years ago you could have never imagined yourself coming in direct contrast to Christianity, you were certainly a proud minister, a Christian minister. But what has happened as we've walked down this path is that we found out that Christianity, by its definition, and especially in the illumination that came from your teaching at the Gospel Revolution Summit number 2 here in Tampa, a couple months ago, we found out that the early teachings of the apostles known as Peter, James, and John were truly the origins of Christianity and were completely contrary to the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace and the gospel that Paul taught.
Yes, no doubt. And it really is an amazing thing to be able to see that. I think it's funny because as much as I could not have imagined seeing myself really juxtaposing Christianity against the gospel, to view them as two separate things and let them stand on their own, and I do let Christianity stand on its own. The very same is I just cannot imagine that I would ever embrace Christianity. Now, to every degree, for me, every degree that I would embrace Christianity is the degree that I'd be moving away from the gospel, and that's quite a mouthful.
And would it be fair to say in the same way that every step you would be moving towards Christianity, you would be moving away from the cross?
Yeah, well, the term moving away from the cross, I don't know what that actually means. I know Jimmy Swaggart uses it a lot, but I don't know that we can move away from the cross.
Well, if we can move away from the gospel, can we move away from the cross?
Well, the cross is already established for us. The cross is what happened. I'm not real sure you can move away from the cross. The gospel is the good news that resulted from the cross. Maybe it's getting to semantics, but it doesn't. It seems as though to me that you couldn't really move away from the cross. That is something that is established throughout eternity now for all of us. That's like moving away from the blood for me, unless I saw it in some other terms. I would say, no, you can't move away from the blood. You can't move away from the sacrifice. You can't move away from what took place, but you can be removed from the information of it, which is the gospel.
We have a lot of questions, and since we have not had a call yet, although we are obviously inviting you guys to call who are listening online, if you're listening right now and you have an inkling to pick up the phone, please do. We want to hear from you, whether you want to make a pledge, whether you have made a pledge or not, whether you don't want to make a pledge or cannot. We want to hear from you. We want to hear your heart. We want to hear your voice at 800-436-3260 or 813-425-5773. One of the beautiful things, you know, we talk about semantics, we talk about terms. One of the beautiful things about what Richard Mull has been experiencing, which is as he has gone through his chemotherapy and his cancer treatment, is that he's been able to spend a lot of time in the gospel. He's been able to spend a lot of time in the scriptures and in the Bible. And in talking to him on almost a daily basis, it's been beautiful to hear these scriptures and New Testament passages again. Because frankly, folks, we're at the point now where we don't spend a ton of time in the Bible. We don't need to. We do when we have to. Michael's preparing for his conference in Calgary. The Grace Conference is coming up at the end of January, which we'll be talking about. But I have appreciated hearing the passages that, of course, confirm what has always been in our hearts and is saving our souls, Michael. But we got an email from Shane Turk, who has contributed to this effort, and he's got a Bible question, a scriptural question, if you will. And so I want to pose that to you right now. He says, "Hi, Glenn and Mike. I am a new gospel revolutionary. I recently decided to start giving monthly to the ministry because the ministry has given so much to me. Mike, you are the best teacher of the gospel on the planet, and I am honored to call you my teacher. With that said, I have a question. I have been looking at the scripture in Ezekiel 36, verses 25 through 27, where it is prophesied that one day we would be cleansed from our sin, given a new heart, and the Spirit of God would come to dwell within us. I understand this took place when Christ died for us on the cross. But my question concerns the phrase in verse 27 where it states that God would cause us to walk in his statutes and keep his judgments and do them. What does this statement mean? Taken at face value, it seems to say that we will always obey the law and be perfect in our behavior according to God's standards. I know that positionally God has made us righteous, but practically speaking, we do not, quote, walk in his statutes, unquote. Could you please bring me some clarification to this verse for me? Thank you so much." And that is from New Gospel Revolutionary, Shane Turk.
Well, Shane, first off, we appreciate your participation and your love for the ministry and your encouragement. It's always welcome. And I think I would have to go back and read that in context. I can certainly give you the gospel answer to that, but as usual, we don't really pre-screen the questions or anything, so I didn't have an opportunity to go back and actually read this in context. The reality, though, that you speak of is true, that all of that was accomplished at the cross. And the only thing that I could imagine is that the follow-up of that, that we would walk in all of his statutes and all of his commandments, is that he was simply saying that achieving that goal first was tantamount, if you will, to keeping all of his statutes and walking in all of them. Obviously, no one ever kept all the statutes of God, not even the holy men of old, who had certainly special callings and predestined lives, if you will, certainly didn't follow those statutes. In fact, they followed something even greater than the statutes. They, in many cases, were predestined to fail and to contradict the statutes of God for a higher purpose. So without actually going back and looking at it in its context, I agree with you, I have to say, that we certainly were given a new heart. We certainly were given a complete clean slate and union with God 2,000 years ago. And I also agree with you that there's no one who would ever be able to keep his statutes. But the thing of it is, his statutes don't exist anymore.
Right.
And that's probably the most direct way that I could address that, is that those statutes, those laws, and those rules and regulations were nailed to the cross, so it virtually is a non-issue on this side of the cross, keeping a statute as it is stated there in Ezekiel. The expectation is there would have to be a statute to keep, and there are none. They were all done away with at the cross.
And whatever statutes needed to be kept in the mind of God, we know that Yeshua kept them by virtue of that he was born without sin.
Yeah, but the same way that we keep them now.
Exactly. And so whatever that means, however Yeshua fulfilled that, Shane, we have now been the beneficiaries. Beneficiaries. I'll get an email from Jeff. Beneficiaries of that gift. That's the gift of grace. I mean, that is the gift of God's unconditional acceptance and perfection.
I think the first thing that comes out of my heart right now as a result of Shane's question is, thank God there are no statutes.
Right.
That is the thing that really come out of this question with, is just a great rejoicing that all the statutes of God not only were fulfilled, but they were done away with. That is explicit in Paul's teachings. Many people like to say that there's no place that the Bible says that the law has been done away with, but contrary to their persuasion, it actually says it several times, and done away with, abolished, a lot of these terms, taken away. So it has been abolished, it's been taken away, and thank God the statutes do not exist for us to attempt to keep.
Well, or to fail to keep,
yes,
as well. That's bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, that is the good news.
Yes.
There is no more hostility, there is no more judgment, there is no more qualification that needs to be met in any way, shape, or form vis-a-vis you and your relationship with the Almighty. That's the gospel. That's what we proclaim 24/7. We do it on the webcast. We do it on gospelrevolution.com. We do it at the Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution on Facebook. And we are happy to do it for you, wherever you are listening from. This is Glenn Klein Online. Welcome in to webcast number 3 of the start of winter pledge drive for the Gospel Revolution. We just got our first pledge for the evening, and it's come just down the road a bit from Riverview, Florida. Carla Barthen chiming in with $20 for the Gospel.
Hi, Carla.
Hey, Carla. And she sends her love to Mikey, Jeffro, and she's given Sean a new nickname, Seanable. I like that.
Thank you, Carla.
So that gets us closer to the goal. We'll be talking more in detail about where we're at, but we need your help, folks. And if you want to give anything.
And that is exactly what it takes, Glenn. It is those actions. It is not, you know, I think so many times we allow ourselves to sit back and judge what's in our heart to give, and we judge it not good enough, so we don't do it at all. And
that hurts the effort.
Yes, absolutely. So here we wind up with judgment still affecting even the efforts of the Gospel Revolution. Don't judge your own heart. Just follow your heart.
That's awesome.
If you have it in your heart, and that just as we might say, just tickles your fancy, it's something that you would enjoy doing, then don't question the amount. My goodness, that is just not the issue. It is simply following your heart. And all of this also not only supplies the need of the ministry, but gives you an opportunity to exercise following your heart. and regardless of what that is, because the most powerful thing coming out of the gospel for the heart is, for the human being pertaining to the heart, is that you learn to follow your heart, and that your heart is not this frightening place anymore of confusion and inability to find its way. Your heart is absolutely capable of guiding you through this life, and we advocate it immensely.
No doubt. And there's a great video clip from the past summit here in Tampa with Mike Cole talking about following his heart. I believe Jeff posted it on the Facebook page at the Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution Facebook page. But it's only about 5 or 6 minutes, folks, but you can research it back and check it out. Or if you just email us at freedom@gospelrevolution.com, we'll be happy to send you the link. But following your heart, we can't recommend it enough. I mean, Carla says in her email she wishes she could do more, but right now she can do $20. And that's what she wanted to do, and that's what she did. And I mean, you guys know that have been listening to this webcast for a while how excited we've been to receive David Johnson's gifts of $1 or $5.42 or whatever it was. I mean, the issue for us, obviously we have to meet bills, but the major issue is the participation.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's the encouragement part of all of this. It's knowing that people are there. Even getting this email is very much a participation in the effort. To hear that somebody has just started listening and the impact that it's made upon their lives, my goodness, that's enough to keep you going for a while. So participation, while we are asking for your financial effort, participation can be on so many levels. Just sending in an email, even with a question,
right,
is participation, and we appreciate it.
Which we have more of, and we've got callers on the line, and we're very excited because, well, we just are. So now without any further discussion, let us please go to line number one. We haven't heard from him in a while, but we are very glad to know that he is alive and well and kicking. Please welcome online from Cleveland, Ohio, the Secretary of Health and Human Services of the Gospel Revolution, Mr. George Najjar. George!
Good evening. How are you guys doing?
Georgie!
Hey, George.
Michael, how are you?
I'm wonderful. It's so good to hear your voice.
Thank you. You too. But I hear your voice every week, so.
Blah, but, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Can't shut you up. No, I'm just kidding. So glad to be on. Tonight you got two new, I don't want to say gospel revolutionaries because they've got one foot on Catholicism and the other on a banana peel.
Well, that's all right.
But they're wonderful, wonderful people.
We'll take them any way we can get them.
Yeah, absolutely. One is 10-year-old D. Lorenzo, and the other is this angel if God ever sent an angel from heaven, it's this girl.
Uh-oh.
Vanessa, his mom. But I wanted to ask a question tonight.
All right.
Sure.
Okay. When my family leaves the Catholic Church, they feel like they've either accomplished something or they feel settled in their soul, or they have this good feeling when they leave their mass. What does the gospel offer them?
Well, my first response is, if it makes you feel good when you leave Mass, just think how good you'd feel if you never went back again. I'm sorry.
Whoa, say that again. How good you would feel
if you never went back again.
When you leave, I get it.
Leave,
okay. When you leave, I got it.
Then you'll always feel good if you stay left.
Just keep walking out the door.
I couldn't resist that. The gospel, of course, offers understanding of truth, and it's something that you don't have to go get to get somebody to re-up or re-annie again. Now, we certainly understand that the talking about something that is good for you. The question has to be, are you hearing the truth? That's the real issue. I don't take issue with anybody that goes to a church or that wants to or feels that it is something that's good for them. I've always encouraged people that if they if that's where they are right now, please continue. And even with your family, I would say to them to continue until they have a reason to not go. And that could only come by understanding the gospel. Do I believe that the gospel would give someone an understanding that would lead them to not attend a Catholic Mass? Yes, I do believe that the gospel would do that.
But that would also extend to an evangelical Christian service.
Oh, to any of them. Or Mormons, doesn't make any difference.
Or Jehovah's Witness, or a Jewish, Muslim,
yes.
It doesn't make a difference.
Right, we're just addressing this issue of going to Catholic Church this evening, but it does, it's applicable to any of them.
But wait a minute, if you don't mind keeping your train of thought, wait a minute, in the middle of the Catholic service, they say the gospel. They have someone go, I think it's the priest, goes up and reads part of the Bible and says, this is the gospel of the Lord. So are you saying there's a different gospel?
I'm saying that there is, there's only two things called the gospel. Now there's the gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But the gospel, according to Paul's teaching, is as far as the teaching of the gospel, is the gospel of grace and the gospel of peace. And reading a passage, I understand what they're saying. They're reading from the gospels, and I'm not sure in Catholicism if they were read from Matthew or Peter, James, or John, if they would say this is the gospel or not.
They don't.
I'm familiar, so it would only be Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John that they would say this.
Right, and that's a very important important part, Michael, of our effort is to recalculate people's understanding of what these words mean that originating with Catholicism. And by the way, have you guys seen the Catholic commercials on TV called CatholicsComeHome.org? They're making a very strong case. They're very effective commercials talking about how the original church started with Catholicism, that they say inspired by the Holy Spirit, the Bible was codified by the Roman Catholic Church, and that Catholics should come home. And I think that it's so important for you guys to understand that these terms like gospel, it is true exactly what George says, the gospel according to the Lord. And then what do people say, George, in response to that?
Thanks be to God, I think.
Thanks be to God, I think. No, they leave out the I think part.
They don't say I think.
All right, praise be to God, or thanks be to God. But, Michael, the gospel, people say the gospel truth, the gospel according to Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. That's not what the gospel is. That's titles and definitions that people have come down after the fact. The gospel only means two things, like you said.
Yeah, those the titles of those were imposed. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John did not say, this is my gospel. In fact, the Catholicism is, actually, I'm glad that they come forward and say, we did this. We were one of the ones who instituted this. We started this, and we codified the New Testament as Scripture, because all of that is true. The question is, see, I would agree even with that Catholic commercial, if you're going to be involved in Christianity at all, go all the way back to Catholicism, because that is the roots of Christianity. I do not disagree with that at all. The issue is Catholicism correct? And for that, now, of course, here's where you have to wade through the feelings of being energized by following a tradition, gathering with people, and getting that sense of family and belonging simply because you gather at a place.
Right, and I think that gets to the issue of what George was talking about. You can get together with your tradition, with what you're used to from childhood, a sense of reverence, a sense of
well-being,
pageantry. But, Michael, you can get the same feeling from going to a hockey game or to a concert or to a family reunion.
Yeah, or, to people who are involved in Islam.
Or the Rotary Club.
In any form of religion. I'm sure Mormons get the same feeling from attending, especially if they go to Salt Lake City and get to the place for Mormonism, that they have a sense or a feeling of comfort in participation there. And the icons that are around, these are very human experiences. But what we're appealing to people about is not a human experience that is connected to a building or a statue or a certain group of people getting together for a under a certain banner of some kind, but actually calling people to something that can really feel, you get the same feeling from, but you don't have to wait until you go there to have it. It really is an amazing, for me, it has been an amazing thing to have that sense of home, regardless of where I am. Of course, I can be someplace. I'm someplace cold. I want to go home, because I'm not into cold. But I certainly understand those feelings. But really, the gospel is calling you to something that is a little bit more than getting a satisfaction out of attendance to a particular service or building or religion, Catholicism or any other.
Well, for
Michael. Michael, can I go?
Yeah, go.
Michael, you said something pretty profound, in my opinion. Then again, I have a simple mind. But you said that you feel like you're home, or you have a sense of, being home. You know, when I was in the, I'll just call it the cult, the Pentecostal thing, and I always felt I was traveling. I never felt I was home. And I wonder if it's the same thing in Catholicism, if you feel like you're traveling instead of your home. And the gospel of peace and grace offers that to you every moment of the day. There's nowhere to go. You're home. You're here already. And I just wonder if you can transcend the sensation of traveling through your religion to finding a home through the gospel.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of people, especially if we look back on it, certainly see it. Most people talk about the journey, and for real, we still are on a very real journey. But this journey is has to do more with experiencing life, not trying to find life. I think in religion and the participation in religion, we're really trying to find something, and that journey is a walk of attempting to find something. My particular understanding in the gospel is not a walk in trying to find anything. It is just simply experiencing life. And that has been a huge difference for me. And I think many people that I'm in communication with on a regular basis is you're not looking for something anymore. You're simply experiencing life itself.
You know, for people that are listening, whether it be Vanessa and her son or people around the globe who, as George said, may have one foot in Catholicism or any church and one foot on the banana peel. In other words, they might be slipping out. Michael, talk to those folks about the efficacy of Christ, and especially this time of year where people are always focused on keeping Christ and Christmas. How important is Jesus Christ in this whole thing?
Well, I just watched a clip of young boy that evidently was a runner-up in the American Idol. I don't know who he was, but I did watch the clip, and he was singing in Utah, and after he sung a couple of songs, he announced that he was withdrawing and going into his 2 years of mission, which is, you know, he's certainly not going to be dressed the way he was on stage. They have a very strict dress code. They have to get up at 6:30 every morning. A day off is just unheard of, and it's 2 years that's very grueling of knocking on doors, really, is what it is.
As a Mormon.
Yes, as a Mormon. And
who might be, or we might have the next president of the United States as a Mormon. So
yes.
Pay attention, folks.
And so he was cheered. I mean, of course, he was in a town that is filled with Mormons, and all of the teenagers cheered him. And he was euphoric. He was in tears when he met with this response to his dedication to Mormonism. And he was absolutely inconsolable as far as just feeling richly rewarded in what he was doing. And I'm sitting here almost crying for him because of what he's getting ready to do and to commit 2 years of his life to this. And I'm sure that he feels a very much of a comfort in that. And again, that's what we're saying with the gospel is that anyone, it doesn't make any difference whether it's roots in Catholicism or Mormonism or anything else, that there's something much more powerful than that to find that feeling of affection and home in, and it's far greater than having to attend or go to a building. And so he announced this to this group, and it's going to be a massive change, but he got a very affirming response from the crowd. And that all of this just reminded me of that particular story of this young man and people doing everything that they can. See, this is a good-hearted young man, and he wants to do the right thing. And so I don't know of too many people, even though we have a candidate who is possibly going to be who is running for president and may be running for president against our incumbent president, and could become the president even, but I don't know of too many people who would endorse Mormonism.
Right, but as an aside, how concerned are you as a citizen of this country that we might be on the verge of electing somebody who embraces and heads on the same trip as this young man and American Idol has done? How uncomfortably are you with the prospect of having that kind of person in the Oval Office versus the people that have come with their religious perspectives?
No more, no less. It's the same amount of concern and the same lack of concern. I mean, I would have the same concerns as anyone who had a persuasion, that, especially that colored their persuasion about the future. That's the main thing with me when it comes to people in politics, if they have any religious persuasion that that they are inclined to think that that somehow they're going to fit into the end of the world mindset, and that's they're being called to this. I have a problem with anybody that would believe that God had called them to be president. That's not how we arrive with presidents in the United States.
Well, hopefully we don't, although we've had a number of them, obviously, in the past.
They certainly believe they were.
But why is it so important for folks to understand that people that think that there's an end of the world coming might not be the most productive mental state or philosophy to embrace?
Well, number one, if you believe that the end of the world is coming anyway and things begin to spin out of control, you may just resign yourself to the inevitable. there's a lot of mindsets that that would spin out of that fatalistic view of the end of the world that could have and possibly has affected the decisions of presidents in the past, even
and other world leaders, exactly.
And yes,
just a little interjection, guys. Lorenzo's 10 years old, so what you just now said meant, if you don't mind me translating, if you think the end of the world is near and there's chaos that breaks out, a war or something, you may just go kill yourself anyway.
Yes, or go kill somebody else.
Or go kill somebody else, or sell everything you have, or not worry about debt because the end of the world's coming. We've seen this over and over again. And, Michael, you mentioned in today's e-newsletter that went out to the Gospel Revolutionaries on the mailing list about your stance on the end of the world. And the end of the world has already happened.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that the more we embrace that inevitability of the continuation of this global thing that's going on here, I think the more rational we become, and I think with more rationality we are more likely to reach logical conclusions that are more likely to help us resolve some issues on this planet.
Well, what was the end of the world, or what is the end of the world, biblically speaking?
The end of the world, the terminology used in the New Testament, especially Matthew 24, by the disciples, when they were asking Jesus about the end of the world, he was referring to the temple at the time. And when they asked him to explain later, when he said all of this will be destroyed, when they were asking him to look at the beautiful temples, they asked him later, well, when is the end of the world? Because that to them was the end of the world. If Judaism, which was completely expressed through that temple in Jerusalem, if it was coming down, that world was going to end. The world of the law, the world of sacrifices and ceremonies was all going to end, and they knew that that would mean the end of the world. But in no context did they mean the end of the planet. The word itself, the term world, does not mean cosmos. There is that word in the New Testament and in the writings of the same person, Paul, in talking about the cosmos, which means the entire planet. But that particular word there is aeon. And it means very specifically an age and particularly a Jewish period of time.
Right. They were talking specifically there about when is the end of the age? When is the end of the Jewish rites of sacrifice? And you guys, just so you have a little bit of context, the United States is about 230 years old. In their situation, they're talking about thousands of years of a sacrificial system. That was a major deal. But it was not the end of the cosmos. It was not the end of the world. In fact, the scriptures does speak, Michael, to the future of this planet, does it not?
Yeah, the scriptures do. The law of the Psalms and the prophets is very clear that what God has created is never going to be destroyed. And now, to whatever degree you think destroyed means, is that does he mean only at God's hand, or does he mean that it will never be destroyed? I tend to think that he means it will never be destroyed. I mean, Jesus did not come to redeem a terminal a group of people, a terminal planet. Instead, he came to make terminal that which was holding this planet in bondage, and helping guide us to the actual answer. I'm not speaking negatively of Judaism and the law, because that was all designed to guide us through, if you will, to the point where that we would wind up at the same conclusion. If we understood the scriptures, everyone would come to the same conclusion if we understood the scriptures. If we understood the law, why the law was given, if we understood the Psalms and what the Psalms were all about, if we understood the prophets and what the focus of the prophets were. And you say, well, how can anybody know that? Well, we can all know it because Jesus said all of the scriptures are about him. So, number one, we remove ourselves out of the equation of the scriptures. Then it becomes much easier for us to see this this incredible corralling, if you will, of the entire human race to an understanding of grace and peace. That's what it's for, to bring us
grace
to faith. The law was there to bring us to faith, to bring us into a complete and total understanding of what the cross would be about.
Grace and peace is a hard thing to accept for some people. Somehow taking the veil off of grace and peace is a difficult thing. I was speaking to a young couple, a homosexual couple, and they were just, you know, nice guys and everything, and I was trying to explain to them, look, you know, God's not mad at you. You're not being bound by God because of, you know, I was trying to explain to them that, you know, these laws against human nature are these old Levitical laws. Mm-hmm. And they just couldn't accept it. They just felt like the, you know.
Wait. A gay couple that you were talking to could not accept.
That's right.
That God
they could
had.
Not accept grace and peace. They couldn't do it.
So they believe they are condemned.
They believe they are condemned.
Yeah.
And this this is power of I don't want to know how else to say it. It's ignorance. It's like how you could take a fifth grade education in reading and comprehension and read the Bible and understand it. But it just seems that if you have an agenda like the Christian right does politically as well, they take a perfectly good political party, which, you know, either one was fine, but you look Republicans for one thing, and I know this interests Glenn, but you can take a Republican party and have the Christian right totally take them over when they got some good ideas fiscally.
But Michael, this gay couple that George speaks of is no different than heterosexual couples or heterosexual individuals that are condemned by the same concept.
Oh, no doubt. Right. And but see, the thing of it is too is the self-righteousness is still there also. When I first started sharing the gospel, and then eventually was able to come to grips with my own sexuality. And everybody was so excited, wow, you'll be so embraced by the Metropolitan Community Church and the gay churches that are around this country and around the world. They were as offended at the gospel as the Charismatics were and the Pentecostals. Sure. They were no less offended by the gospel in their pursuit of righteousness. Now, these guys sound like they fall on the other side of it, that they've just completely given up hope. I don't know, but it sounds as though that they have.
Right. They're resigned to a place in hell.
Yes.
Which people on both sides of the sexual dividing line are, of course, because they were like, what the hell?
I know.
But why were those people as offended by the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace as any straight evangelical church?
Self-righteousness. They had learned that from the Metropolitan Community Church that God didn't destroy Sodom and Gomorrah because of sexuality. It was because of homosexuality. It was because of inhospitality. And
Wait a second. The gay churches that you've had affiliation with say that God did not destroy Sodom and Gomorrah because of homosexuality, but because of inhospitality.
Yes,
because absolutely. Because they were in hospital.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it had nothing to do with sexual orientation.
That's
they were
awesome.
Not hospitable to them.
That's great.
And any good gay guy knows you need to be hospitable. So.
Of course you do.
And a lot of straight folks believe that too. But they had developed an exclusion for gay from the law. So they stood back and judged everybody else. It was,
wow.
I mean, honestly, it was, when I was around the churches, it was some of the most judgmental people I've ever been around.
If you judge people that were gay as being unacceptable to God, that was worthy of judgment.
Yes, and once those gay people remove themselves out of that category, they have to be judgmental, or they can't maintain their position of the exemption from the law.
But what did you find out about yourself as a homosexual vis-a-vis the law of God, and how that incorporates the rest of humanity?
My own personal experience was embracing the fact that homosexuality, just like all sexuality, is condemned by God. For God's sake, eating was condemned by God. Everything was condemned. There was nothing not on the condemned list.
Eating was condemned by God in the Old Covenant.
Yes, there was.
Had some delicious barbecued spare ribs from Carla last night. By the way, for my birthday, she made the special barbecued spare ribs.
That's a good thing to make a Jewish boy who's been set free.
That my sons enjoyed thoroughly, I have to say.
A whole bunch of Jewish boys that have been set free.
Would I have been condemned as much by enjoying those spare ribs as a gay or lesbian person?
Well, there's no difference in God's law. There's the equation that religion has placed on the different categories of sin, or categories of God's law, and the disobedience to them is not in the scriptures. And Paul let us know that categorizing the sins, or menial sins, or mortal sins, or what are all the different categories that they have, that just doesn't exist. Paul said, to come to grips with the revelation of the truth, you have to understand that if you broke one law, you've broken them all. And which Leviticus also gives breath to that understanding, which is where Paul got it from, because Leviticus and Deuteronomy both teach that if you keep all of God's law, that and you never break God's law, and it doesn't say any room for sacrifices and repentance or confessing your sins. It says if you never break God's law, you will be blessed.
Okay, so if DiLorenzo steals a piece of candy, he's guilty of murder?
Absolutely, under the law. And that is the equalizing force of the law. The law puts us all on the same level, whether we have murdered or thought of an indecency even.
An angry thought.
You can't even think of a decent thought? You can't even think angry thoughts?
You can't even think it. Because thinking it is doing it according to Jesus, and that's what we find in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, where Jesus is recorded to have said that if you even think about it, you've done it. And
so how do you get free of all that? How do you not have to worry about all that?
Well, that's the wonderful understanding of the Gospel, and that's understanding that grace and peace has freed us from all of those requirements. It doesn't make any difference what they are, even the requirements that Jesus said, if you even think about it, you have sinned.
Right, so was Yeshua setting up a new standard of behavior, Michael, or was he trying to teach us something?
Wonderful question. No, he was not setting a new standard of behavior, which I actually heard in the charismatic church that I was in. during those years, that Jesus actually raised the standard of the law. But Jesus didn't raise the standard of the law. He simply was the first one to teach the standard of the law. The law doesn't have different standards. It didn't. The standard of the law was not raised when Jesus said, "If you even think about it, you've done it." That was the standard all along. It was just that nobody ever taught God's law in its purest form. God's law is very powerful. God's law was there to reveal sin and to reveal what sin was. You see, if everybody's guilty, no matter whether it is the mass murderer or the person who had a sexual thought, if they're all condemned equally, that's where Paul says in Romans 7, I had to come to grips with something. this isn't me that's sinning, that's sin that dwells in me. So the problem isn't with what I do. The problem, he was speaking of the condition before the cross, the problem is with who I am, what I am, and what I am has to change. That's the power of the gospel, is that through the cross, all of us have been changed into new creatures. Everyone, it is so powerful to know that everyone on this earth is righteous and holy and perfect in God's sight. The transformation that comes on this planet is not the point where we become righteous because we've already become righteous. That is the point that is very powerful. But we have to understand we became righteous 2,000 years ago.
Yeah, over 2,000 years ago.
And now it is just the gospel. The gospel is a complete revelation of what we've been freed from and what we have been established in. We have been freed from the law. We've been freed from religion. That's the amazing thing, that we develop these addictions to religion that Jesus actually set us free from. Jesus did not start the Catholic Church. Now, I agree with them that Peter, James, and John started the Catholic Church, and I agree that they were the ones who put the blessing on New Testament writings and these things. But I do differ with them in that they say that Jesus is the head of the Catholic Church. Jesus is not the head of the Catholic Church. Jesus is head of the body of Christ, and that's the entire planet. That is everyone. Jesus is Lord over all, as is stated very clearly by Paul, that Jesus is Lord over all. Is Jesus Lord over the Catholic Church? Jesus isn't Lord over a particular group. Jesus is Lord over everyone. And when someone establishes a group that says, we are the way that you find and obtain right standing with God, it doesn't make any difference what that group is. It is a lie. There is no group that can offer righteousness and right standing with God by your participation or your being a part of it. That is that truly is something that I know beyond the shadow of a doubt. And this is all of them. Every building that stands in the name of any religion, that they offer you a means by which you can gain relationship or fellowship with God through attendance or following or adhering to their particular method, it is a lie, because that in itself is going completely against the completed work of the cross, which was Jesus defeating sin, taking the law, nailing it to his tree, delivering us from a religion. Jesus didn't die and free us from religion to start a religion.
Good preaching, Roberts.
Wow.
That's good stuff. And if DiLorenzo and Vanessa and the future gospel revolutionaries to be named later are still listening, hear that loud and clear, that you are perfect and
yes,
holy
you are.
And righteous and without blame, without sin, totally perfect. And with God, you are one. There is no separation between you and God because of the blood of Yeshua, the blood of Jesus Christ. Georgie, thank you.
Thank you.
We love you.
I love you guys. Michael, thank you.
Thanks for contributing. We love you.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
There goes George and Jar from Cleveland, Tennessee. Good stuff, Maynard. We've got a lot to get to yet tonight on the webcast number 3 of the Start of Winter Pledge Drive of the Gospel Revolution. There's a line available for you now at 1-800-436-3260 to join us, 813-425-5773 around the planet. And we will continue with this freedom-loving message known as the Gospel right here on the Gospel Revolution Radio Network.
What do you want to do? What's your heart say? How many people have wound up married?
because it was supposed to be the will of God. These are the things that you're all upset about. What would you like to accomplish, regardless of what age you are? Do you know how many people's lives have been paralyzed by sitting back waiting to figure out what the will of God was for their lives? I hate that doctrine. I absolutely detest it. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul.
That was just a sample of what Mike Williams said when he spoke at the 3rd Annual Gospel Revolution Convention in Calgary. Mike taught the book of Romans verse by verse from beginning to end, and you will never hear Paul's letter to the Romans taught like this. Connie Nelson told me after attending the convention that it changed her life and she will never see the Bible the same way again. Vic Dobrynin called it groundbreaking stuff, and David Dwyer of Brisbane, Australia said it felt like he had just been through a 10-hour detox program. This 11-hour series entitled The Book of Romans Revealed is available on audio CDs for $88 plus shipping and handling, or you can download it right now for just $44 at gospelrevolution.com. You have to hear it if you're going to believe it.
The level I have for that man, Robert Moore, is beyond stating.
You know, I agree. Oh, my gosh, yeah, these commercials. I've never gotten tired of listening to them, and I hope it's not just because it's me in them, but the truth that is in them is just really amazing. The other thing that I'm amazed at is that if I believed in reincarnation or channeling, I would think that there's times I channel Bela Lugosi.
You do. You do. Well, it's really not Bela Lugosi. It's really, I can't think of the actor's name. Jeff Robertson will be quick on the button. Who played Bela Lugosi? I can't think of it. He was the original vampire. Damn it. Frank, I can't think of the guy's name. All right, I'm a little bummed out right now, folks.
Frank Vampire.
No, that's not it.
So, yeah, they're wonderful. I love the commercials. It's
The over and under on when we're going to hear from Jeff is 45 seconds. We're taking bets right now. This is Glenn Klein Online. It is Gospel Revolution Wednesday night. It is webcast number 3 of the Gospel Revolution Start of Winter Pledge Drive. There's a line available for you to call in right now at 1-800-436-3260. We did get another pledge in just now, which we are very thrilled about. Hold on. I'm going to go to it right now. $10 came in from the great state of California.
Oh, amazing.
Very good. From Danny Minaskanzian. I'm not pronouncing that right. Minaskanians. Minaskanians. Minaskanzians. I'm saying that's Greek. That's what I'm saying. Minaskanzians. Danny.
This is our first time hearing from Danny.
From Studio City. He's actually been in touch recently. And we are so thankful for his $10 donation.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much.
All right, so we're in 160 plus countries of the world. If 1,000 people gave $10 each, we'd be done.
For sure.
Over the planet. If 1,000 people did what Danny just did, all you guys got to do is go to gospelrevolution.com, page down. There's the information about how to give to the pledge drive, and what you get for giving to the pledge drive is all at gospelrevolution.com. Mm-hmm. And we are
get gifts.
You get stuff. Yeah,
get stuff.
You get stuff for different levels of giving. And Jeff Robertson will be more than happy to commune with you and let you know exactly what you get. I think we have about 3 books left of Stephen S. and Aaron Essery's book, The Hour We Least Expected, which is all about the gospel. Those are for people that give $100 in total new or additional monthly pledges over the course of the year, which a number of people have done.
Oh, yeah.
And so just go to gospelrevolution.com and look at all the information about the pledge drive. We are trying, we are doing our best to raise $11,491 over these 21 days. I know that sounds like a small amount. That is the deficit that we find ourselves in. We are bringing in a little short of $18,000 a month. Basically, our we're at about $29,000 about what our expenses are quarterly, not monthly. Excuse me, quarterly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And so that we have very specifically delineated how much we need during the course of the month and during the course of the quarter to meet our goals and to meet our bills. And I can safely say, as Richard Mull said last week, Michael, that nobody's getting rich on this effort.
not yet, and not in the foreseeable future. Of course, the thing of it is that the goal is, that's not the goal, is to anybody to get rich. Our goal is to share the gospel with people. And that's what this is, that's what the effort is for, so that we can continue. And in any way we can expand our efforts to getting the gospel out. I mean, we were at a point before our appeal that went out a couple of months ago, which people responded to really fantastically. But we were really at a point of just having to decide not to reproduce CDs anymore, just simply because of the cost, the upfront cost, and not being able to get those upfront costs done. So yeah, it's just, it's not pleasant to fall behind when what you're doing is such an effort to be to bring, you know, the what I really do believe, the truth of the gospel to people's lives, and then to run into obstacles like that, to where that we, you know, we're having to even, we had to even consider shutting down even the reproduction of CDs.
Yeah, we talked about it, folks, that literally, because it just was cost prohibitive to continue to duplicate the CD program that we've had for so many years now, and before that, the cassette tape. And before that, the 8-track. I don't think we ever did 8-track.
No, we never did 8-track.
But that's just the reality. And, you know, we're okay with it. We're good. But we've got to take time, during these three pledge drives every quarter. We have 12, webcasts every quarter. We take three, webcasts just to talk about it at all. And we extend our time so that we get plenty of gospel in. And we're asking for your participation. And so, Danny, thank you so much from Studio City, California. I remember when I was a kid, you know, you see those shows. From Studio City in California.
Yes.
That's not too far from where Jacob Klein lives, by the way, in Oceanside. Jeff has corrected me, not about Bela Lugosi. I think Bela Lugosi was the guy's name, actually.
I was thinking so, but
I think that was his actual name. He didn't play Bela Lugosi. He played Dracula or whoever. I think his name was that. But Jeff has corrected me. He said that George Najjar was from Cleveland, Tennessee.
In your last comment, you did.
Yeah, but why don't you correct me?
Well, you had said Cleveland, Ohio in your introduction, so I...
No, George up there in Ohio, not down there in Norval Hayesland in Cleveland, Tennessee. Most specifically, Jeff says that George is from Strongsville, Ohio.
Let's get it right if we're going to get it right.
Damn straight. This is Glenn Klein Online. We've got several more minutes left. We've got a lot to get to. We've got emails. We've got to get to our next caller. And you can call us, too, at 800-436-3260. That's toll-free in North America, 1-800-436-3260, 813-425-5773. If you are living outside of North America and it's about 5 minutes to 10 o'clock on the East Coast of the USA, that means you're listening live. We would love to hear from you. And we love to hear from this next gentleman, our senior Hoosier correspondent. Let's go to Manchester, Indiana. And, we waited for an update and now we've got it from, Mr. Grant Miller. Grant!
Hello!
Grant!
Grant!
Hi, Glenn.
Thanks for hanging in there, buddy.
Yeah. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Grant. Good to hear you, bud.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I called in on that other line, Glenn, and I don't know, a little bit of trouble with connection somehow, so...
Well, no, we're glad to have you. Of course, people have gotten an update on your condition and your mental state via the e-newsletter and by listening to the radio show, but we haven't heard from you in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Have you got your prosthetic yet?
No. Originally, I thought I would by now, and I had... another surgery here 2.5 weeks ago. I thought I was done with those. But they needed to reset my femur and fasten it with hardware in a little different position so it would heal better. And as a result of that surgery, I don't know. It seems like there might be a slight complication with the angle at which they set it. And so, gotta go back in here in a week. CT scan. Check out the exact alignment of the femur, and depending on the results of that, why it could even mean another surgery. So I'm a little disappointed, bummed. I wanted to, you know, every surgery, every time they mess with that femur and have to reset it, why it's just pushing my prosthesis back further into 2012, you know?
Right. You want
a little bummed about that, but I'm personally doing great. So
you want to get to walking.
Yes, I can't wait to try on that prosthesis. Crank it up, start it, you know, pull the cord and listen to it run.
Well, for those of you guys that are new to this radio show, Grant had a pretty serious motorcycle accident. Coming out just almost immediately after the Gospel Revolution Summit number 1 in Houston, where eventually, Grant, they had to take your leg below your right knee, and you were okay with that. How has the Gospel affected your whole perspective on not just what happened to you then, but even the new surgeries and the delay of your prosthetic?
That's a really good question, and you know, some would say the two don't intersect, but you know, I was thinking about that. They have thought about it different times, and I know under the bondage of religion that I used to be, every good thing was somehow a blessing from God, and so therefore every so-called bad thing was probably either from Satan or somehow punishment from God.
Well, just by way of information, please inform the beautiful humans of what religious persuasion you used to be under.
It was called Old German Baptist Brethren. That won't mean anything to most of them, but it's along the line. Well, the background is Brethren, but to look at us, you'd have said we were Amish, possibly, because we would have looked like them, although we had telephones and automobiles, but very close-knit group, very shut out to the world, no interest in evangelism or Bible study of any sort, the main thrust of the group, which was nationwide, only being that to preserve. Wow. Preservation of the group, which was done by children, you know, having several children, number one, and then getting them in the church and keep them in the church. That's their goal and focus. And so there's a lot of religious traditions. And
did you used to have a funky beard and a hat and stuff?
Yes, Glenn. I about cringe to think of it because, and somebody's like, well, why do you cringe? You know, why is that so repulsive to you? Because I know what I believed at the time. It felt so dark and confusing. And now to look back, I can't believe the length of time we spent in that dark tunnel before somehow saying there's got to be a better way. There's got to be answers. There's got to be light. It took a while. You know, it was a journey. Everyone has a story.
Yes, everybody has a journey, and everybody's still on a journey.
Yep.
What was the opening for you? How did that happen for you?
Even though I misunderstood it, at the time, Romans 5:1, therefore being justified by faith, that just shook me to my core, because I was taught that we had a hope of going to heaven by feet washing and observing the holy kiss and the head covering on the ladies and...
Wait. Okay, I can understand feet washing. I can understand head covering. What was the
I know where you're going.
What was the holy kiss?
Men to men and women to women. You know, like an Eastern...
Really?
...kiss, although... See, that's what Paul probably had a little more in mind, but we know this.
Now you're going to meddling now.
It's lips on lips. Yep.
You guys had a. Did you know this, Michael?
I did not know this.
You had a holy kiss? A man?
Yes.
I met. Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Where can I join?
The history of the brethren of the, and the old German Baptist, he were the ones who kept the brethren way of thinking the most pure.
And men on men, lip to lip kissing was the holy kiss.
Yes, absolutely.
Really?
Nothing short of it. Nothing on the cheek. No.
You used to kiss men in the German, what was your church called?
Hey, don't make it sound, you know, it's just.
I really want to know. What was your church called?
Old German Baptist Brethren.
Old German Baptist Brethren used to kiss, or they probably still do.
Absolutely, they still do.
They lip lock.
No, it's just a bump.
Just a bump.
Yeah. Growing up from a child, I never thought a thing about it, of course. I thought that's what every good person...
You grow up with it, yeah?
Yeah, like anything else. But, you know, back to this question... When you think things that happen to us that we don't necessarily relish, is somehow God trying to bump you back into line, or punishment for something you've done, or, you know, some kind of scourging or whatever you want to call it, you live in fear. It's, you know, that's almost worse than the thing itself is, what have I done wrong? How do I gain God's acceptance? And when you get that behind you, and you know that Christ took care of that, and now we are accepted in Him, now all there is to do is just deal with issues. You know, they're just events. There's really nothing good or bad. I don't even think of things as good or bad. They're just events to get beyond. Just things to deal with and move on and face what's coming around the corner next.
What is the spiritual implication of those things that we go through?
What are the spiritual implications of what?
Of what we go through. How spiritual are they?
Oh, I don't think at all. They're just events in this life.
Michael, what would you say to that comment by Grant Miller?
Good preaching, Robert. It really has nothing to do. I do want to follow up here with something, because Grant talking about this feeling of disappointment in the process. You know, Grant, you've faced an awful lot, and you didn't feel that feeling of disappointment because you were embracing where you were. You got me wondering something now, because when I recall what I was going through when they had told me for 3 months that I was in stage 3 kidney failure, which turned out not to be true, but it was real to me at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was really amazing, because I was going through that amazement with how I was reacting to this bad news. But then I remember one particular time I went in for tests, and in my mind I had determined that this test was going to turn out better. And when I went in, it didn't, and I was faced with that disappointment. So I learned, what I started learning on that level is the deal with expectations.
Uh-huh.
And because I had a predetermined expectation, that's what led to the disappointment. Because I'd certainly had more disappointing news than what that particular test showed. It was much more disappointing to get it at the first, But that news was not the shocking news. It was when I had pinned myself to an expectation of a particular event. Do you see that there's any correlation to your disappointment in this? Is that you had already expected, put an expectation on what the outcome of this was going to be, and when, and how long? And that really isn't that really what leads to disappointment? It's not the situation, but the expectations that we put on things.
I think absolutely, because there's no way I'm going to say I wasn't disappointed. I was today.
Oh, I know. I've been feeling myself.
I had no other thought in mind but what we'd go in there and we'd find out, hey, things are looking good, things are moving straight forward, and I'm shortly going to be where I thought I was going to be. And so, yes, I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed in these doctors. I had all confidence in them, total trust, and they did their very best.
Yeah,
every one of us drops the ball.
That was your first mistake.
Well, I know. I'm telling you what I thought. I'm not telling you what I should have thought. Yeah.
No, it really is. I tell you, that's been a life lesson for me. And the gospel has helped me to put myself, and you say, well, how in the world would you stop having expectations on particular things to avoid disappointment?
Uh-huh.
Well, there's reasonable expectation, and then there's just expectations that are just what we want things to be the outcome. But
and
when
then
the,
where is, you know, just, hey, full bore forward, positive, hey, it's going to be fine, the future's going to be good, instead of going into everything.
Well, even that is an expectation.
Somehow it's keeping an open mind,
no,
I guess.
Well, but see...
Absolutely true. It is keeping an open mind.
Uh-huh.
And knowing that we can't predict what is going to happen.
Yeah.
And and that's exactly what I went through in this, was predicting ahead what was going to happen. Not to imply that disappointment is going to become, but it's the issue for me was that that I moved out of the position of just being the observer in my life, being the witness.
Yes.
And boy, I went into being the condemned almost, you know, with the results of these tests, and I was a victim. All of a sudden, I was a victim of the results of these tests. And it was a quick lesson for me, but I realized that I was no longer observing. I was living my life. I decided, and I think that you're in this same situation too, along with a lot of others. You know, Paul said that he was dead, and it was no longer he that liveth. There is something about ceasing to live your own life. And instead of living it, you just observe it.
It's almost
you're
like
watching yourself live your
living,
life.
You mean.
And that's the most stable emotional position you'll have ever, is to be able to observe yourself. It's kind of bizarre to talk about, honestly, until you've experienced it. But it's not though it's a foreign thing, because, you know, and this is what got me actually to thinking about it. You know, when people come to a point of a crisis, to where that their death is almost imminent, unless something happens, they say, my life passed before me. So it's funny how that at the point where we think we're facing the end of life, we become an observer.
Mm-hmm.
And my question in those situations, which I had that with a bee sting and with other things, and where I just resigned, this is it. And it's incredible.
When you say this is it, you mean you were on the verge of death.
I'm dying. This is it. There's nothing that can save me. And there's this incredible peace that goes along with that. And yet, here I was facing my imminent death as a result of this bee sting, which that sounds crazy. I'd have to tell a whole story about allergies to bee stings, but suffice it to say, I got it.
Or suffice it to say, listen to the past webcast, and you'll hear it.
Yes. So here we are, I'm at total peace facing death. And yet here I was so horribly disappointed about a test result not coming back the way I expected it to.
Right.
So this whole issue became something that I wanted to think through. And I appreciate your call, and I appreciate you telling us about this, because it gives us an opportunity to step back and look at these things and do just exactly that, observe them and talk them out and see, you know, what it is. It's not that there's something wrong with being disappointed. Please don't anybody misunderstand me. Disappointment is disappointment. But I don't see anything wrong with us stepping back and saying, why would I be able to face the really tough things and then all of a sudden here with these setbacks, I go through disappointment?
All right, so why?
I believe it's because of expectations. I think that's what Grant was telling us.
Because the gospel at that moment, see, here we're talking, right now you're listening to three avowed gospel revolutionaries, folks. We're talking about people who have come through traumatic situations and in much more minor situations, and I'm sure, Grant, you will agree with that, given what you were facing with the doctor's prognosis recently, much more minor than what you were facing before.
Initially, yeah.
Is just a lack of gospel in one's soul. And, you see, you guys don't understand. The gospel, this thought, this concept, the power of God that Paul called it, that we are completely and utterly united with God and with each other and within ourselves, that given moment by moment situations, we can be outside of that thought. And that can affect it. See, if you stay in that thought long enough, you will become an observer. We guarantee this. You will become an observer of your life. We cannot recommend that position more, as an observer, as a witness, as Michael said, of your life. But if you step outside of it and go into it and have expectation, Shakespeare said it this way. Here's what Shakespeare said, that expectation is the root of all heartache. Now, either Shakespeare was speaking out of his heart that had been filled with the Holy Spirit and had been perfected and redeemed and united with God, or he wasn't. Either expectation is or is not the root of all heartache. We think it is. And we cannot recommend enough to you on this mid-December evening to allow the gospel to saturate your soul to such a point where you become an observer.
We all need it, for sure.
We all need it. Everybody. Yeah. I don't care how long you've lived. I don't care how long you've been in the gospel. You need the gospel.
Even when we understand the gospel, we still need the gospel.
I need the gospel desperately.
Yeah.
Grant needs the gospel desperately. George Najjar needs the gospel desperately. Jeff Robertson needs the gospel desperately. Richard Mull needs the gospel desperately. Cannot recommend this gospel of peace and this gospel of grace enough. Grant, we're up against the clock. We cannot thank you enough, brother. Thank you for calling.
Yep. Yep. Glad to be on. Great. And thank you. Love you
thank
both.
Thank you, Grant. Love you.
Yep. Love you. Call me, will you, please?
Okay.
All right.
Yep. I'll do.
Okay. There goes Grant Miller. The long John Silver of the Gospel Revolution.
Grant is a popular man. We all want to hear from him.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. We got this definitive answer from Danny from Studio City, California. He said, first of all, Glenn and Mike, my name's pronounced Minnis Canyons. Minnis Canyons.
I didn't attempt it. It was only you.
He goes, it's Armenian, not Greek, which is about the worst thing that I could have said, of course.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
lost the gospel revolutionary.
I don't think so. He goes, I'm enjoying your show as always. Yes, Bela Lugosi was the actor who played Dracula.
That's exactly
right. In 1931. You mentioned the name Frank. You're probably thinking of Frank Langella, who played Dracula as well. He goes, I love the Tampa Session Files. I asked Jeff about Wade Brewer,
after listening to the 2009 webcast, his presentation at Mike's Doctrine of Fulfillment series at GospelLogic.com is a Gospel Revolution essential.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is, Danny. We love the Wade Brewer.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, my God, do we love the Wade Brewer. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I've got a major announcement coming from the Gospel Revolutionary, formerly of Manchester, Tennessee, the Poet Laureate of the Gospel Revolution, Jackie Barnard. He says, I am so happy to announce my new address is Wachuca City, Arizona.
Yay!
Jackie, well, I'm going to read the rest of the email before I comment. He goes, the lovely, talented, and sexy Billy Thompson and I are listening to the webcast together for the first time ever.
Aw, that's so awesome.
I'm here because I am following my free heart.
Yes.
This is what my free heart has led me to do. I do not say that every 56-year-old man that follows his heart will leave his job of 12 years, sell his house, and move 1,700 miles from his children and grandchildren to give himself to a woman he has known for only a few months. But who knows? It works for us. And that's from Jackie Barnard, who now is of Wachuca City, Arizona.
Oh, that's awesome. We love you guys, Jackie and Billy. My goodness.
Billy and Jackie met at Michael's house for the first time
at the
Gospel Revolution Summit number 1 in Houston, Texas. And as they say, the rest is history.
And got lost in my car.
They got lost in your car. Jackie borrowed Michael's SUV to head to get some souvenirs from Houston, from Texas.
That was the story. Yeah.
And 3 hours later, Jeff Robertson was still trying to give him directions back to the house. and now Jackie has moved to Wachuca City, Arizona from Tennessee. And, the rest is history.
Yeah, I thought... they were calling in and saying, Houston, there is a problem. So they couldn't get back in. So, but they made it, and we are so delighted to hear from both of you tonight. And we're excited for you, happy for you. I tell you what, my little house here, there couldn't be a better place for a wonderful, two wonderful people like this to meet and eventually decide to live their lives together like this. This is awesome. So, I got a great little house here. It's wonderful. It's not a big house, but it is definitely a peaceful place.
No doubt. Sausage,
gravy, and biscuits.
Good sausage, gravy, and biscuits. And as I've often recommended, we ought to do a Gospel Revolution dating site. So far, so good.
Oh, and we did that without setting up the site. Let's let the next one do the same.
Exactly, and that will be the site. So just check out GospelRevolution.com on a frequent basis, and the Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution Facebook page, and you never know. All right, well, we're a little over time here. I've got to read all the beautiful humans that have contributed to this Pledge Drive effort. But before I do, I would be remiss not to mention today's e-newsletter that went out. Where you unabashedly proclaimed that Christopher Hitchens, the well-known media figure and avowed atheist who passed away last week at 62 years old after a long bout with cancer, passed away, and you made the unmitigated statement that not only had he gone directly from his last breath here on earth to heaven, but that you had learned a lot and appreciated much of what Christopher Hitchens had to say publicly.
Yeah, he was, I think the thing that I appreciated about him most is that he wasn't afraid to speak his mind. And that was a regardless of the consequences to himself, and the unpopular stances that he took. I don't think it's so much that there are some things that I heard him say that I totally agreed with him, but I even agreed with him saying the things that I disagreed with him on because he said them because he believed them, and he thought they were true, and he thought that he had the right to to say those things.
Right, but
and that I respect. I really love that type. I love that freedom.
But Michael, you know? how could an avowed I mean, he was as adamant against Christianity and against any kind of faith in God and any kind of belief in God. How could you confidently say that he found his eternal destiny in heaven?
Well, I'm exactly like Christopher in that. I'm avidly against Christianity. I'm avidly against faith in God. I'm avidly against belief because the gospel has nothing to do with any of those things. The gospel has to do with what God has done for us and toward us, and the faith of God and the grace of God, and that even the attempt of man to believe was nothing more than the final exercise of the law to try to believe for something, and we failed at all of it. So even in those three aspects, I'm totally in agreement with him. But the powerful thing is that he was able to, even in the face of not knowing the truth of the gospel, was able to really lob off Christianity and faith and believing in something to change his eternal destiny.
But where is your confidence that Christopher Hitchens, who, I mean, you could Madeline Murray O'Hara, another famous atheist, Bill Maher, who's still on television, who just railed against the so-called fairy tales of the Bible and Christianity. Where is your confidence that these people, and Christopher Hitchens specifically, who passed away last week, actually did not go to hell, but went to heaven?
Same confidence I have for myself. It's absolutely no different. If I have any confidence, whatever degree the confidence is that I have eternal life, has to be the very same level of confidence that I have for him and everybody else on this planet. I cannot be more confident about my own eternal destiny than I am someone else's. And that is the real fallacy of these specialized individual experience-based redemption exercises on the face of this planet that sets you apart from the rest of the human race, is that you don't really believe those things. You mouth them to the people you're around, but the greatest fear is that you're not right, is that you may be wrong and that you may not be living up to it and you not believe good enough. The only peace that anyone has, I really believe the only peace anyone has about their own eternal destiny, is when they embrace that the eternal destiny of the entire planet is exactly the same.
And what do you base that on?
I base that on the scriptures, on the gospel.
And in 15 seconds would you describe that?
It's the revelation of grace and peace. The understanding that through the cross of Jesus Christ, all of even a potential for guilt was eradicated, and all of God's judgment was absorbed in a body of one man. And the righteousness that was in that one was distributed to the entire planet.
Case closed, end of discussion, folks. On this December 21st evening, right prior to Christmas, where the misinterpreted and mistranslated peace on earth and good will towards men is propagated all over the planet.
Yeah.
When the passage actually says, on earth, peace towards men and goodwill. This is an announcement of God in his attitude towards humanity based on the birth of Yeshua, not on December 25th. It doesn't really make a difference, but it wasn't on December 25th. Probably happened sometime in the late summer, early fall, when the shepherds still would be out in the deserts in Israel, because they wouldn't be out there right now because they'd be freezing their butts off. This is the reality that we're dealing with. You cannot take Christ out of Christmas. Nobody can. Christ is all in all. He is everything, every breath that you take, every thought that you have that is of
unity and peace and righteousness. That is a gift. That is the gift of the Holy Spirit. And I got to tell you, Michael, that your post today on talking about Christopher Hitchens, really, it spurred a lot of conversation on Facebook. It spurred a number of emails. And even though we're a few minutes over time, I'd be remiss not to ask this question of you. Because as Christopher Hitchens was so prominent in his anti-Christian stance, and he debated many Christians during the course of his career about their stance, and as it became public knowledge that he was sick with cancer, of course, a number of well-meaning Christians reached out to him and were telling him that they were praying for him, or asked him if they wanted him or wanted them to pray for him, for Christopher Hitchens. And his response was, pray if it makes you feel good. And you took that same position in today's newsletter. When people ask you, should we pray for you, Michael? Should we pray for your physical, your emotional, your financial well-being? And you said, I would say the same thing. Pray if it makes you feel good. And we heard from a dear brother of ours, Gary Amaral, who has done great work in the area of research of biblical translations and the actual meanings of words, and the whole history of the whole concept of hell that originated, of course, from the Roman Catholic Church. And Gary emailed us today. Gary's website is tentmaker.org. And he said, so if I understand your point, you agree with Hitchens, who said on praying for someone, pray if it makes you feel good. If I understand you correctly, prayer is basically meaningless. Why bother unless you want to make yourself feel important? Or am I missing something? And he signs it, peace, Gary, from Gary Amaral. Michael, what are you saying to pray if it makes that person feel good?
Because the issue, my understanding of the issue of prayer is that it is one of the prayer and praise, actually both, were both part of the Psalms, and Jesus said that he was, that the, all of the prayers, all of the praises were about him, including the laws and the prophets. And we understand that all of those were fulfilled in him. So prayer, as far as a petition to God to respond in any way, is completely fulfilled. I am completely persuaded that this complete that all of this was completely fulfilled 2,000 years ago, even though Paul spoke about it, and the Book of Acts speaks repetitively about it. All of the letters really do speak about it. But they also speak about a lot of things that were not a part of the New Covenant in the New Testament. But prayer, as far as the petition toward God, is completely fulfilled.
Even Paul spoke about things that were not a part of the New Covenant.
Oh, absolutely he did. And that's where that our my personal resolve is to adhere to the Scriptures. And if Jesus says the Scriptures were all about him, and we understand now that all the Scriptures are fulfilled, that's where I hang my hat, if you will. And personal experience has been my greatest disappointments. We were talking about disappointments. As far as experience is concerned, my greatest disappointments have been through prayer. Not my greatest encouragements, but my greatest disappointments.
What do you mean? What do you mean by that?
Because I've never gotten an answer. Now it took me a while to come to the point where that I realized that I had not gotten an answer. Because I could certainly talk myself into that I had gotten an answer or somebody had gotten an answer, but we redefine what the answer is every time to try to hang on to this. And for me, the issue is if somebody is saying that they are praying to God, see, there's something wrong with that, because in the very essence of the fact you're praying to God, you are praying to a separate entity. and the whole revelation of the gospel. Now, here's the thing. If somebody wants to pray, please go right ahead. I just like when we first got the understanding and I started teaching about the forgiveness of sin, I didn't go around advocating that people stop confessing sin. I stopped confessing sin. I have also ceased to petition God for results in my life. I offer no petitions to God. Now, I can tell you that my life has gotten, the experience of life has gotten no better, no worse. If the cessation of prayer were to be applied to the circumstances of my life, I went through three major situations last year with no petitions to God to intervene in those situations, and all of them turned out royally. So I could advocate that not praying is what causes everything to turn out right. Of course, I'm not going to do that. But the issue with prayer, and this is what I want to encourage everybody about, do as you want and what your heart is led at this time. Just like what we were talking with Vanessa and her son, if you still want to go to the Catholic Church, go to the Catholic Church. If you still want to petition God for things, petition God for things. For me, the understanding of the gospel has become just a constant state of an attitude of thankfulness. If thankfulness is prayer, and Paul indicates that it is, then I pray without ceasing. Because my demeanor about life itself is one of thankfulness. I was sitting here talking with Chris, my good friend Chris from Illinois, the other night, and we were watching the Planet Earth on TV. But I got, and of course you know I'm an avid genealogy buff. I'm amateur, I'm very avid genealogy buff. And some of the people have seen some of the things that I've spoke of, my own third great grandfather and all of this. But when you do that, it puts you in a certain mind to realize any one of these people, which I now have discovered hundreds of great grandparents all the way back through the generations, and on one line all the way back to 1300s. And when you realize that all of these people had to survive long enough to pass along egg and seed for you to be here. If any one of these people had died the day before, my grandfather could have died very easily, as Washington's son did in the battle there at Valley Forge, from the very same sickness that my grandfather had. My grandfather lived, Washington's only son died.
Your great, great, great grandfather.
Yes, my great, great, great grandfather. And then, of course, the issue of just, you know, when the seed that meets the egg, out of millions for each time, I mean, that would change who you are. And you think of all the millions for each and every conception of each and every person, the fact that I'm here is amazing. It's just absolutely amazing. When anybody realizes that they're just here on this planet, I'm just very grateful to be here. Now, none of that was by divine providence that I'm here. That's just the power of this incredible life that's here on this earth. And I am here, and I'm very grateful for that. And I'm grateful to experience the gospel and grateful to experience life in light of the gospel. So my entire demeanor is just simply thanksgiving. I do openly, not just admit, I'm glad to tell people I don't petition God anymore.
Right, and see, here's the thing, folks. We have made, through the 6 years plus of this webcast and the 25 years plus of the Gospel Revolution, we have made a determination based on our study and our meditation and our discussion and our prayer, if you will, that prayer for us is not petition.
We are not asking God for to do anything any longer because we think it is finished. When Yeshua said on the cross that it is finished, we took that seriously now.
Yeah.
And so prayer to us is a place of thanksgiving, as Michael said. And we believe that thanksgiving, based on the fulfilled work at Golgotha, the fulfilled work of the cross, the realization that there is no separation between men and women and God, that everybody is one, that produces salvation of the soul. That is a worthwhile effort, in our humble opinion. Whether it come in a verbal prayer, in a thought, as Michael said, in listening to a teaching, in a song by Kate Benham, or whatever, in a poem by Jackie Barnard, it doesn't make a difference how you meditate this truth. That is a prayer. Our constant thought, and it is pretty constant in many gospel revolutionaries' mind, that is a prayer.
Yes.
And
it's gratitude, it's thankfulness. Oh my gosh, it's overwhelming sometimes, gratitude and thankfulness.
So far from being meaningless, it is completely meaningful. There's nothing more that could have meaning than that. But in no way, shape, or form, and hear us loud and clear tonight, that in no way, shape, or form do we think that anybody, whether they understand the gospel or not, asking God to do something for them will have any kind of successful conclusion. Even if one interprets it that way, even if something comes out like you hope it does, it did not come from God. God is no more involved in answering those kind of prayers than he is involved in keeping the earth on its axis this evening. Get that. That's how finished the work of the cross is.
Yes.
We are way over time, but I would be remiss not to mention, as we wrap up this webcast, the final webcast of the start of Winter Pledge Drive for 2011, that we are at $9,794 on our way to $11,491.
Wow, close.
Yeah, we're getting there. So you guys that are listening on the archive, please email us at freedom@gospelrevolution.com. Call the office at the top of the Gospel Revolution webpage and make up the difference. We are, what are we? We're about $2,000 short, so we need your help. But here are the revolutionaries who have contributed thus far to the start of Winter Pledge Drive. We love to hear these names. Let us rehearse George Howell from Monongahela, Pennsylvania, Tom Tosky from Canton, Ohio, Greg Amberge from Mainville, Ohio. We had an anonymous gift from Fitchburg, Wisconsin, Dale Van Sickle from Clyde, North Carolina, Cliff and Katie Griffin from Gainesville, Georgia, Mary Lou Kusra from Tampa, Florida, Craig Davis from Chipley, Florida, Alan Davis, also from Chipley, Florida, Billy Thompson from Wachuca City, Arizona, Robert and Linda Parks from Mobile, Alabama, Bill and Jeannie Schultz from Pollock Pines, California, Mary Kustra from Ellijay, Georgia, Steve Stredwick from Whitehall, Montana, Gene Davyduck from Castor, Alberta, Mike and Letitia Kolb from Daytona Beach, Florida, Carrie and Rita Whiteman from Whitehall, Montana, Leroy Barrel from Marshville, Wisconsin, Gene Giglio from Opelika, Alabama, Tom and Linda Wilby from Fredericton, New Brunswick, Jerry and Susan Berman from Longwood, Florida, Wayne Jensen from Bingham Lake, Minnesota, Deidre Simpson from Kelowna, British Columbia, Ted Winsett from Decatur, Alabama, Arthur Wirch from Brandon, Manitoba, Dwayne and Ruth Daku from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Jackie Barnard, newly minted from Wachuca City, Arizona, Alvin Cooper from Oak City, Florida, Richard Mull from Garden Grove, California, Doug Bowman from Little Rock, Arkansas, Vic Dobrennan from Calgary, Alberta, Barry Cooley from Dyersburg, Tennessee, Shane Turk from Groveland, Florida, Leah Dyke from Kelowna, British Columbia, Bob Hines from McDonough, Georgia, Beverly Galuska from Allen Park, Michigan, Steve and Mary Keller from Cortez, Colorado, Steve Dietart from Toma, Wisconsin. I know where that is. And we have another anonymous gift from Edmonton, Alberta. Chris Ann Panther from Waterloo, Iowa. George Najar from Strongsville, Ohio. Lee Lau from Hong Kong. Yay! Asia's in the house. Randy Bailey from Kamloops, British Columbia. Carla Barton from Riverview, Florida. And Danny, I'm going to mispronounce it, Meniscascoons. No, I'm going to pronounce it correctly. Hold on. Where is it? Hold on. See, this is what we do, folks. We care so much that we're going to pronounce our name right. Meniscanons! Danny Meniscanons from Studio City, California.
Yay, Glenn.
That is a phenomenal list of beautiful humans.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. We do appreciate it. And just all that much more redounding to many Thanksgivings, redounding to the glory of God. You know, I never will forget that teaching from Paul. They said many Thanksgivings would redound to the glory of God. And the Thanksgivings redound to the view and the opinion of God. So the thankfulness is produced by the view and opinion of God, and the thankfulness produces the view and opinion of God. So you're just trapped in a wonderful maze of glory.
Right, and you just introduced an entire new subject, so we'll go for another 90 minutes here. No, he won't. But we have...
My big mouth.
Yeah, we've gone an extra 30 minutes. Sean has been incredibly patient, and hope you guys have enjoyed it. We want to wish you a very Merry Christmas,
yes,
wherever you are celebrating and however you are celebrating, all over the planet. Happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, happy Festivus. And however you want to celebrate, we celebrate with you.
Yes, we do.
No doubt. We're going to do it again. We got one more show before the end of the year, next week.
Wow.
It will still be in 2011.
We will.
We hope to be able, without major expectations, we hope to be able to report that we made up the extra $2,000. If you guys are listening, whether it be live or on the archive, please let us hear from you, as Danny did with his $10, as Carla did with her $20. All that makes a huge difference. Somebody can cut a check for $1,500 or $2,000, and it will be no skin off your nose, but it will make a huge difference in this effort. Let us hear from you at thegospelrevolution.com. The number to call the office and talk to Jeff is at the top left-hand corner of the homepage. And I know it does not sound like a big deal, $11,491. But, Michael, that's our reality, and we're good.
Yeah.
We're good with it.
We are good.
No doubt.
And grateful.
And grateful. Thank you so much to George Najar from calling from Ohio tonight. We also heard from Grant Miller in Indiana, for you guys that emailed and have given. Thank you to Sean O'Halloran for producing and engineering and call screening in an extraordinary way. To Jeff Robertson for administrating this effort. To Michael L. Williams for presenting. You're the presente and the founder. Are you still with us?
I am here.
Okay, good.
And thank you.
You're welcome. And
Thank you, Glenn.
I have a
Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I didn't even mention that last Monday.
And happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah, and it was my birthday.
Yes, it was just a couple days ago.
Yeah, I know. We had a good time. If you guys want to give $19 in honor of my birthday on December 19th, you're more than welcome to do it. Thank you, guys. I need to get some tea and honey in me from Carla. I'm on my way home. So thank you guys for logging on from around the world. And until next week, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!